Stories about his father. His time in the Order having taught him the true extent of the Battle Lord's fame, but never asked to hear any. To Caenus, Valen's father was a legend, a hero who stood at the king's side throughout the Wars of Unification. To Valen, he was a rider disappearing into the fog 2 years ago. "What are his children called?" Valen asked. For some reason, his parents had never told him much about the court. "The king's son and heir to the throne is Prince Malcius, said to be a studious and dutiful young man. His daughter is Princess Lyanna, who many think will grow to outshine even her mother's beauty." Sometimes Valen was disturbed by the light that shone in Caenus's eyes when he talked about the king and his family. It was the only time his thoughtful frown disappeared, as if he wasn't thinking at all. Valen had seen similar expressions on people's faces when they offered thanks to the departed, as if their normal self had stepped out for a moment, leaving only the faith behind. As winter deepened and snow covered the land, preparation began for the test of the wild. Their treks with Master Huttrill became longer, his lessons more detailed and urgent. He made them run through the snow until they ached, and handed out severe punishments for laxness and inattention. But they knew the importance of learning all they could. By now they had been in the Order long enough for the older boys to favor them with the occasional word of advice, normally consisting of a lurid warning of future dangers, the test of the wild featuring large among them. They thought he had disappeared for good, but they found his body the next year, frozen to a tree. He tried to eat fireberries and spewed his liver up, wandered into a wild cat's den and came out carrying his guts in his arms. The stories were no doubt exaggerated, but concealed an essential truth. Boys died in every test of the wild. When the time came, they were taken out in small groups over the course of a month, to lessen the chance they might meet up and help each other through the ordeal. This was a trial each boy had to face alone. There was a short barge trip upriver, then a long cart journey over a featureless, snow-covered road, winding into the lightly forested hill country beyond the Erlish. At intervals of 5 miles, Master Huttrill would stop the cart and take one of the boys into the trees, returning sometime later to take up the reins again. When Valen's turn came, he was led along a small stream running into a sheltered gully.
"You have your flint?" Master Huttrill asked.
"Yes, master."
"Twine, fresh bowstring, extra blanket?"
"Yes, master."
Huttrill nodded, pausing, his breath steaming in the chilled air. "The Aspect has given me a message for you," he said after a moment.
Valen found it odd that Huttrill was avoiding his gaze.
"He says you are likely to be hunted whenever you leave the shelter of the house. You may return with me and be given a pass on this test."
Valen was speechless. The shock of the Aspect's offer, coupled with the fact that this was the first time any of the masters had referred to his ordeal in the forest, left him dumbfounded. The tests were not just arbitrary torments, dreamt up over the years by sadistic masters. They were part of the Order, set down by its founder 400 years ago and never changed since. They were more than a legacy. They were an article of the faith. He couldn't help feeling that to avoid a test and still continue in the Order would be more than just dishonest, not to say disrespectful to his friends. It would be blasphemy. Pondering further, another thought came to him. What if this is another test? What if the Aspect wants to see if I will avoid an ordeal my brothers cannot? But as he looked into Master Huttrill's guarded gaze, he saw something that told him the offer was genuine. Shame. Huttrill thought the offer an insult.
"I fear to contradict the opinion of the Aspect, Master," he said, "but I think it unlikely an assassin would brave these hills in winter."
Huttrill nodded again, a soft sigh of relief escaping him, a rare, very slight smile on his lips.
"Do not range far. Listen to the voice of the hills. Follow only the freshest tracks." With that he shouldered his bow and began his long trek back to the cart.
Valen watched him go, feeling very hungry despite the hearty breakfast they had all eaten that morning. He was glad he had taken the opportunity to steal some bread from the kitchen before they left. In accordance with Huttrill's lessons, Valen began building a shelter immediately. Finding a useful nook between two large rocks to serve as walls, he set about gathering wood for a roof. There were some fallen branches about that he could use,
but soon had to resort to cutting extra covering from the surrounding trees. He walled off one side by piling up snow, rolling it into thick blocks as he had been taught. His work complete, he rewarded himself with a bread roll, forcing himself not to bolt it, despite his hunger, taking small bites and chewing thoroughly before swallowing. Next he had to light a fire, arranging some small rocks in a circle next to the shelter's entrance, clearing the snow from the center and filling it with twigs and small branches he had prepared by stripping away the snow-damp bark to reveal the dried timber beneath. A few sparks from his flint, and soon he was warming his hands above a respectably lively fire. Food, shelter, and heat, Master Hutchell always told him. That's what keeps a man alive. Everything else is luxury. His first night in the shelter was restless, beset by howling winds and biting cold against which the blanket he had draped over the entrance was scant protection. He resolved to fashion a more sturdy covering the next day, and passed the hours trying to hear voices in the winds. It was said that the winds would carry into the beyond, and the departed used them to send messages back to the faithful, some of whom would stand for hours on hillsides, straining for words of wisdom or comfort from lost loved ones. Velin had never heard a voice on the wind, and wondered who it would be if he did. His mother, perhaps, although she hadn't come to him again since his first night in the Order. Mikkel, maybe, or the assassins, spitting their hatred into the wind. But tonight there were no voices to hear, and he drifted into a fitful, chilled slumber. The next day saw him gathering thin branches to weave into a door for his shelter. The work was long and tricky, leaving his already numb fingers aching from the effort. He spent the rest of the day on the hunt, arrow notched into his bowstring as he scanned the snow for tracks. He fancied there had been a deer through the gully in the night, but the tracks were too faint to follow successfully. He did find fresh goat tracks, but they led to a steep rise he had little hope of climbing before nightfall. In the end, he had to content himself with bringing down a couple of crows that had mistakenly perched too close to his shelter, and setting a few snares for any unwary rabbits that felt the need to venture into the snow. He plucked the crows and kept the feathers for kindling, spitting the birds and roasting them over his fire. The meat was dry and tough, making him appreciate why crow was not considered a delicacy. As night came, there was little to do but huddle near his fire until it burned down, then settle into his shelter. The door he had made was more use than the blanket, but still the cold seemed to settle into his bones. His stomach growled, but the wind howled ever louder, and still he heard no voices. He had better luck in the morning, bringing down a snow hare. He was proud of the kill, the arrow catching the animal as it scampered for its hole. He had it skinned and cleaned within an hour, and took a great amount of pleasure in roasting it over the fire, staring with wide eyes at the grease running over the blistering skin. They should call this the test of hunger, he decided, as his stomach gave voice to another obscenely loud growl. He ate half the meat and stashed the other half in a tree hole he had chosen for a good hiding place. It was a good distance off the ground, he had to climb to reach it, and the tree was too slender to support the weight of a scavenging bear. It was a real effort to resist the urge to gobble all the meat at once, but he knew if he did, he might have to face the next day without a meal. The rest of the day was spent hunting without success. His snares remained frustratingly empty, and he had to content himself digging for roots from under the snow. The roots he found were hardly filling, and took a lot of boiling before they were edible, but sufficed to take the edge off his hunger. His one stroke of luck was finding a yalin root, inedible but possessed of a particularly foul-smelling juice that would be useful in protecting his food store and shelter from prowling wolves or bears. He was trudging back to his shelter after another fruitless hunt when it began to snow in earnest, the wind soon whipping the flakes into a blizzard. He made it back before the snow became too thick for him to see his way and wedged his door of woven branches firmly into the entrance, warming his ice-cold hands in the hare's pelt he had chosen to use as a muffler. He couldn't light a fire in the middle of a snowstorm, and had no choice but to sit it out, shivering, flexing his hands in the fur to stop the numbness setting in. The wind was louder than ever, still howling, leaving its voices in the beyond. What was that?
He sat up, holding his breath, ears straining. A voice. A voice on the wind. Faint, plaintive. He sat still and quiet, waiting for it to come again. The shriek of the wind was continuous and infuriating. Every change in tone seemed to herald another call of the mystery voice. He waited, breathing softly, but nothing came. Shaking his head, he lay down again, huddling beneath the blanket, trying to make himself as small as possible.
"Curse you."
He jerked upright, instantly awake. There was no mistaking it. There was a voice on the wind. It came again, quickly this time, the wind allowing only a few words to reach him.
"You hear me? I curse you. Regret nothing. I... nothing."
The voice was faint, but he could hear the rage in it clearly. This soul had sent a message of hate back across the void. Was it for him? He felt cold dread grip him like a giant fist. The assassins. Brack and the other two. His shivers deepened, but not through cold.
"Nothing," the voice raged. "Nothing. Have done as anything. You hear me?"
Vaylin thought he knew fear. He thought the ordeal in the forest had hardened him, made him in some ways immune to terror. He was wrong. Some of the masters had talked of men pissing themselves when fear overcame them. He had never believed it until now.
"I'll carry my hate into the beyond. If you curse my life, you'll curse my death 1,000 times.
Valen's shivers stopped momentarily. Death? What kind of departed soul speaks of dying? A very obvious thought occurred to him in a rush of embarrassment he was glad no one was there to see. "Someone is outside in the storm whilst I sit here cowering." He had to dig his way out. The blizzard had piled adrift against his door, fully 3 feet high. After a few moments' effort, he scrambled out into the fury of the storm. The wind was like a knife, cutting through his cloak as if it were made of paper. Snow pelted his face like nails. He could see almost nothing. "Ho there!" he called, feeling the words vanish into the gale as soon as they escaped his lips. He dragged air into his lungs, swallowing snow, and tried again. "Ho! Who's there?" Something shifted in the blizzard. A vague shape in the wall of white. Gone before he could make sense of it. Drawing another breath, he began to fight his way towards where he thought the shape had been, heaving his legs out of the freezing drifts. He stumbled several times before he found them. Two shapes, huddled together, partially covered by the blizzard. One large, one small.
"Get up!"
Vaylin shouted, prodding the largest shape. It groaned, rolling over, snow falling away from a frost-encrusted face. Two pale blue eyes staring out from the mask of ice. Vaylin drew back slightly. He had never seen a gaze so intense. Not even Master Solace's stare could pierce a soul like this. Unconsciously, his hand closed over the knife beneath his cloak.
"If you stay here, you'll freeze to death in minutes," he shouted. "I have shelter."
He waved back the way he had come.
"Can you walk?"
The eyes kept staring, the frost face immobile. "My luck holds true," Vaylin thought ruefully. "Only I could find a madman in the middle of a snowstorm."
"I can walk."
The man's voice was a growl. He jerked his head at the smaller shape next to him.
"I'll need help with this one."
Vaylin moved to the small shape, dragging it to its feet, drawing a pained gasp. As he pulled the figure upright, a hood fell away to reveal a pale, elfin face and a shock of auburn hair. The girl remained standing for only an instant before collapsing against him.
"Here,"
the man grunted, taking one of her arms and laying it across his shoulders. Vaylin took the other arm, and together they struggled back to the shelter. It seemed to take an age. Incredibly, the storm was growing in intensity, and Vaylin knew that if they stopped for even a second, death would follow soon after. Reaching the shelter, he scraped the already regrown drift away from the entrance and pushed the girl in first.
gesturing for the man to follow. He shook his head.
You first, boy.
Velin noted the adamant tone in his growl, and knew lingering to argue would be pointless, and possibly deadly. He crawled into the shelter, pushing the girl's body deeper as he did so, cramming them both in as tightly as he could. The man followed them in quickly, his bulk leaving little remaining space, and jammed Valen's door into the entrance. They lay together, mingled breath clouding the confines of the shelter. Valen's lungs burned from the effort of struggling through the snow, and his hands trembled uncontrollably. He put them inside his cloak, hoping to stave off frostbite. An irresistible tiredness began to creep over him, clouding his vision as he slid towards unconsciousness. He had a final glimpse of the man next to him, peering out at the storm through a gap in the door. Before exhaustion overtook him completely, Velin heard the man mutter,
"A little longer, then. Just a little longer."
He surfaced with a splitting headache, a thin beam of sunlight lancing through the roof directly into his eye, provoking a painful yelp. Next to him, the girl shifted in her sleep, one of her boots leaving a bruise on his shin. The man wasn't in the shelter, and a strong, distinctly appetizing aroma was wafting through the entrance. Velin decided he would rather be outside. He found the man cooking oatcakes over his campfire on an iron skillet, the smell provoking an excruciating surge of hunger. Free of the mask of ice, his features were lean though deeply lined. The rage that had clouded his eyes in the storm was gone, replaced with a bright friendliness Valen found disconcerting. He put the man's age in the mid-30s, but it was difficult to tell for sure. There was a depth to the face, a gravity in his stare that spoke of a wide breadth of experience. Valen kept his distance, worried he would grab at the cakes if he got too close.
"Went back for our gear,"
the man said, nodding at the two snow-dusted packs nearby. "We had to drop them last night a few miles back. Too much weight." He took the cakes off the heat and offered the skillet to Valen. Valen, mouth flooded with drool, shook his head.
"I can't." "Order boy, eh?"
Valen nodded, dumb with longing.
"Why else would a boy be living out here?"
He shook his head sadly.
"Still, if you weren't, Stella and I would be lying under the snow."
He got up, approaching to offer his hand.
"My thanks, young sir."
Valen took the hand, feeling the hard callus that covered the palm.
"A warrior?"
Looking the man over, Valen doubted it. The masters all had a certain way of moving and talking that marked them out. This man was different. He had the strength, but not the look.
"Erlin Illness," the man introduced himself.
"Velin Alsorna." The man raised an eyebrow.
"The name of the Battle Lord's family?"
"Yes, I've heard." Erlin Illness nodded and let the subject drop.
"How many days to go?"
4. "If I don't starve before then."
"Then accept my apologies for intruding on your test. I hope it won't spoil your chances of passing."
"As long as you don't help me, it shouldn't matter." The man squatted down to eat his breakfast, cutting the cakes into portions with a thin-bladed knife and lifting them to his mouth. Unable to bear it any longer, Valen rushed off to collect his stash of hare meat from the tree hole. He had to dig through a thick covering of snow, but was soon back at the camp with his prize.
"I haven't seen a storm like that for many a year,"
Erlin commented softly as Valen began roasting his meat.
"Used to think it an omen when the weather turned bad. Always seemed like a war or a plague would follow soon after. Now I just think it means the weather turned bad."
Valen felt compelled to talk. It took his mind off the endless growl of his stomach.
"Plague?
The Red Hand, you mean?
You couldn't be old enough to have seen it."
The man gave a faint smile.
"I am widely traveled. Plague comes to many lands in many forms."
"How many?" Valen pressed. "How many lands have you seen?"
Erlin stroked his stubble-gray chin as he pondered the question. "I honestly couldn't say. I've seen the glories of the Alperian Empire, and the ruins of the Leandrin temples. I've walked the dark paths of the great northern forest, and trod the endless steps where the Airhill Sill hunt the great elk. I've seen cities and islands and mountains aplenty. but always without fail everywhere I go, I find myself in a storm.
You're not from the realm?
Velen was puzzled. The man's accent was odd, possessed of vowels that jarred on the ear, but still clearly Asraelin.
Oh, I was born here. There's a village a few miles south of Varensold, so small it doesn't even have a name. You'll find my kin there.
Why did you leave?
Why travel to so many places?
The man shrugged.
I had a lot of time on my hands, and I couldn't think of anything else to do.
Why were you so angry?
Erlin turned to him sharply.
What?
I heard you. I thought it was a voice on the wind, one of the departed.
You were angry, I could hear it. It's how I found you.
Erlin's face took on an expression of deep, almost frightening sadness. Such was the depth of his sorrow that Velen wondered again if he hadn't rescued a madman.
When a man faces death, he says many foolish things, Erlin said. When they make you a full brother, I'm sure you'll hear dying men say the most ridiculous nonsense.
The girl emerged from the shelter, blinking dazedly in the sunlight, a shawl clutched about her shoulders. Seeing her clearly for the first time, Velen found it hard not to stare. Her face was a flawless pale oval, framed by light auburn curls. She was older than he by a couple of years, and an inch or two taller. He realized he hadn't even seen a girl for a long time, and felt uncomfortably out of his depth.
Sella, Erlin greeted her. More cakes in my pack if you're hungry.
She smiled tightly, casting a wary glance at Velen.
This is Velen Alsorna, Erlin told her, a novice brother of the Sixth Order. We owe him our thanks.
She hid it well, but Velen saw her tense when Erlin mentioned the Order. She turned to Velen and moved her hands in a series of intricate fluid movements, an empty smile fixed on her face.
Mute, he realized. She said we're fortunate to find such a brave soul in the midst of the wilderness, Erlin related.
In fact, she had said, tell him I said thank you and let's go. Velen decided it would be better if he kept his knowledge of sign language to himself.
You're welcome, he said.
She inclined her head and moved to the packs.
Velen began to eat, shoveling the food down with dirty fingers, and not caring that Master Huttrell would have been appalled at such a spectacle.
Erlin and Sella conversed in sign language whilst he ate. The shapes they made were practiced, and formed with a fluency which shamed his own clumsy attempts to mimic Master Smentil. But despite the fluency of their communication, Velen marked the sharp, nervous movements of her hands, and the more restrained, calming shapes made by Erlin.
"Does he know who we are?" she asked him.
"No," Erlin replied. "He is a child. Brave and clever, but a child. They are taught to fight. The Order tells them nothing of other faiths." She cast a brief, guarded glance in Valen's direction. He grinned back, licking grease from his fingers.
"Will he kill us if he knows?" she asked Erlin.
"He saved us, don't forget."
Erlin paused, and Velen got the impression he was trying not to look at him.
"And he's different," his hand said. "Other brothers of the Sixth Order are not like him."
"Different how?"
"There's more in him, more feeling. Can't you sense it?"
She shook her head.
"I sense only danger. It's all I've felt for days." She paused for a moment, a frown creasing her smooth brow.
"He has the Battle Lord's name."
"Yes, I think this is his son. I heard he gave him to the Order after his wife died."
Her movements became frantic, insistent.
"We have to leave now."
Erlin forced a smile in Velen's direction.
"Calm down or you'll make him suspicious."
Velen got up and went to the stream to wash the grease from his hands.
Fugitives, he thought. But from what? And what was this talk of other faiths?
Not for the first time, he wished one of the masters were here to guide him.
Solis, or Huttrell, would know what to do.
He wondered if he should try to hold them here somehow. Overpower them and tie them up. He wasn't sure he could do it. The girl didn't present a problem, but Erlin was a grown man, and strong. And Velen suspected he knew how to fight even if he wasn't a warrior by trade. All he could do was keep watching their conversation to learn more. He caught it by chance. The wind shifted and brought it to him, faint but unmistakable. Horse sweat.
Must be close if I can smell it. More than one. Coming from the south.
He hurriedly climbed the south side of the gully, scanning the southern hills. He spotted them quickly, a dark knot of riders half a mile or so to the southeast. Five or six of them, plus a trio of hunting dogs. They had halted. It was difficult to make out what they were doing from this distance, but Valen surmised they were waiting for the dogs to pick up a scent. He forced himself to stroll slowly back to the camp, finding the girl sullenly prodding the fire with a stick, and Erlin retying one of the straps on his pack.
"We'll be on our way soon," Erlin assured him. "We've put you to enough trouble."
"Heading north?" Valen asked.
"Yes, the Renfalen coast. Sella has family there."
"You're not her family?"
"Just a friend and travelling companion."
Valen went to the shelter and fetched his bow, feeling the girl's mounting tension as he strung the bowstring and slung the quiver over his shoulder.
"I have to hunt."
"Of course. I wish we could give you some of our food."
"It's not permitted to take aid from others during this test. Besides, I'm sure you can't spare any." The girl's hands moved irritably.
"True. I suppose we should take our leave now," Erlin said, coming over to offer his hand. "Once again, my thanks, young sir. It's unusual to meet such a generous soul. Trust me. I know."
Valen moved his hands, the shapes he made clumsy compared to theirs, but the meaning was clear enough. "Riders to the south, with dogs. Why?" Sella's hands went to her mouth, a pale face nearly white with fear. Erlin's hand inched closer to the curved-bladed knife at his belt.
"Don't do that," Valen instructed him. "Just tell me why you're running, and who's hunting you."
Erlin and the girl exchanged frantic glances. Her hands fidgeted as she fought the impulse to communicate. Erlin took her hand. Valen wasn't sure if he was trying to calm or silence her.
"So they teach you the signs," he said, his tone neutral. "They teach us many things." "Did they teach you about deniers?"
Valen frowned, remembering one of his father's infrequent explanations. It had been the first time he saw the city gate, and the bodies rotting in the cages that hung from the wall.
"Deniers are blasphemers and heretics, those who deny the truth of the faith. And you know what happens to deniers, Valen?
They are killed and hung from the city walls in cages.
They are hung from the walls while still alive and left to starve to death. Their tongues are cut out so their screams will not disturb passers-by. This is done purely because they follow a different faith."
"There is no different faith."
"Yes, there is, Valen."
Erlin's tone was fierce, implacable.
"I told you I had been all over this world. There are countless faiths, countless gods. There are more ways to honor the divine than there are stars in the sky."
Valen shook his head, finding the argument irrelevant.
"And that's what you are?
Deniers?" "No. I follow the same faith as you."
He gave a short, bitter laugh.
"I've little choice, after all. But Sella has a different path."
"Her belief is different, but just as true as yours and mine.
But if she's taken by the men hunting us, they will torture and kill her. Do you think that's right? Do you think all deniers deserve such a fate?"
Valen studied Sella. Fear dominated her face, her lips trembling, but her eyes were untouched by her terror. They stared into his, unblinking, magnetic, questing, making him think of Master Solis during the first sword lesson.
"You can't trick me," he told her.
She took a deep breath, gently disentangled her hands from Erlin's, and signed, "I'm not trying to trick you. I'm looking for something."
"And what's that?"
"Something I didn't see before." She turned to Erlin. "He will help us." Valen opened his mouth to retort, but found the words dying on his lips. She was right. He would help them. There was no complexity to the decision. It was right. He knew it. He would help them because Erlin was honest and brave, and Sella was pretty and had seen something in him. He would help them because he knew they didn't deserve to die. He went into the shelter and returned with the Yalin root.
"Here,"
He tossed it to Erlin. Cut it in half, and smear the juice on your feet and hands. Whose scent do they have? Erlin sniffed the root uncertainly.
What is this?
It'll mask your scent. Which of you do they follow?
Sella patted her chest.
Valin noted the silk scarf around her neck. He pointed at it, motioning for her to hand it over.
My mother's, she protested. Then she'll be glad it saved your life.
After a moment's hesitation, she undid the scarf and gave it to him. He tied it around his wrist.
This is disgusting,
Erlin complained, smearing the Yalin juice on his boots, face contorted at the pungent stench.
Dogs think so too, Valin told him.
After Sella had anointed her own boots and hands, he led them into the densest part of the surrounding woodland. There was a hollow a few hundred yards from the camp, deep enough to hide two people, but offering little protection against expert eyes. Valin was hoping whoever hunted them wouldn't get close enough to see it. When they had settled into the hollow, he took the Yalin root from Sella and smeared as much juice as he could squeeze from it on the surrounding ground and foliage.
Stay here, keep quiet. If you hear the dogs, lie still, don't run. If I don't return in an hour, head south for 2 days, then circle west. Follow the coast road north. Stay out of the towns.
He made to leave when Sella reached out to him, her hand hovering close to his. She seemed wary of touching him. Her eyes met his again, not questing this time, just bright with gratitude. He smiled back briefly and was gone, running full pelt towards the hunters. The sparse woods blurred around him, his hunger-racked body aching from the effort. He pushed his pains away and ran on, the scarf on his wrist trailing in the wind. It took 5 long minutes of hard running before he heard the dogs. Distant, high-pitched yelps growing into sharp, threatening barks as they drew closer. Valin chose a defensible position atop a fallen birch trunk and quickly took the scarf from his wrist, tying it around his neck and tucking it out of sight. He waited, arrow notched tight to his bowstring, breath steaming as he dragged air into his lungs and fought the tremble from his limbs. The dogs were on him quicker than he expected, 3 dark forms bursting from the undergrowth 20 yards away, snarling, yellow teeth flashing, churning snow as they sped towards him. Valin was momentarily shocked by the sight of them. They were an unfamiliar breed, larger, faster and more thickly muscled than any other hunting dog he had seen. Even the Renfalian hounds in the Order's kennel seemed like pets in comparison. The worst thing was their eyes, glaring yellow, filled with hate. They seemed to glow with it as they closed on him, drool trailing from snarling maws. His arrow took the first one in the throat, sending it tumbling into the snow with a surprised, piteous whine. He tried for another arrow, but the second dog was on him before the shaft was clear of the quiver. It leapt, sharp-nailed paws scrabbling at his chest, head angled to fix the flashing teeth on his neck. He rolled with the force of the lunge, letting his bow slip away, his right hand pulling the knife free from his belt to stab upwards as his back connected with the ground, the dog's momentum helping bury the blade in its chest, punching through ribs and cartilage to find the heart, blood gouting from the mouth in a thick black spray. Fighting nausea, Valin put his boots under the twitching body and heaved it away, rolling upright, knife leveled at the third dog ready for the charge. It didn't come. The dog sat, ears flattened, head lowered near the ground, eyes averted. Whining, it raised its muscular form to edge closer, then sat again, glancing at him with a strange, fearful but expectant expression.
You better be rich, boy,
a gruff, deeply angry voice said.
You owe me for 3 dogs.
Valin whirled, knife ready, finding a ragged, stocky man emerging from the bushes, his heaving chest indicating the hardship of running in the wake of the dogs. A sword of the Azraelin pattern was strapped across his back, and he wore a soiled, dark blue cloak.
2 dogs, Valin said.
The man glowered and spat on the ground, reaching back to draw his sword in a practiced, easy movement.
These are Valerian slave hounds, you little shit. The third's no good to me now.
He came closer, his feet moving over the snow in a familiar dancing motion. Sword point low, arm slightly bent. The dog growled, a low, menacing rumble. Phelan risked a glance at it, expecting to find it advancing on him once again, but instead its yellow, hate-filled gaze was fixed on the man with the sword, lips trembling over bared teeth.
"You see?" the man shouted at Phelan. "See what you've done? 4 years to train these bastards in the shitter!"
It came to Phelan then, a rush of recognition he should have felt as soon as the man appeared. He raised his left hand slowly, showing it to be empty, and reached inside his shirt to pull out his medallion, holding it up for the man to see. "My apologies, brother." Momentary confusion played over the man's face. Phelan realized he wasn't puzzled at the sight of the medallion. He was calculating if he was still permitted to kill him, even though he was of the Order. In the event, the decision was made for him.
"Sheath your sword, Mackerel,"
said a strident, cultured voice. Phelan turned as a horse and rider emerged from the trees. The sharp-faced man on the horse nodded at him cordially as he guided his mount closer. It was a grey Azraelian hunter from the Southlands, a long-legged breed renowned for stamina rather than aggression. The man reined in a few feet away, looking down at Phelan with what might have been genuine goodwill. Phelan noted the colour of his cloak. Black. The Fourth Order.
"Good day to you, little brother,"
the sharp-faced man greeted him. Phelan nodded back, sheathing his knife.
"And you, master?"
"Master?"
he smiled faintly.
"I think not."
He glanced at the remaining dog, now growling at him.
"I fear we may have provided you an unwelcome companion, little brother."
"Companion?"
"Valerian slave hounds are an unusual breed. Savage beyond belief at times, but possessed of a rigid hierarchical code. You killed this animal's pack leader, and the one who would have replaced him. Now he sees you as the pack leader. He's too young to challenge you, so instead we'll provide you with unswerving loyalty, for now."
Phelan looked at the dog, seeing a snarling, drooling mass of muscle and teeth, with an intricate web of scars on its snout, and fur matted with mingled dirt and shit.
"I don't want it," he said.
"Too late for that, you little sod,"
Mackerel muttered behind him.
"Oh, stop being so tiresome, Mackerel,"
the sharp-faced man admonished him.
"You lost some dogs, we'll get some more."
He bent down to offer Valin his hand.
"Tendris Alforn, brother of the Fourth Order and servant of the Council for Heretical Transgressions.
Phelan Alsorna." Phelan shook the hand.
"Novice brother of the Sixth Order, awaiting confirmation."
"Yes, of course."
Tendris sat back in his saddle.
"Test of the wild, is it?"
"Yes, brother."
"I certainly don't envy your order's tests."
Tendris offered a sympathetic smile.
"Remember your tests, brother?" he asked Mackerel. "Only in my nightmares."
Mackerel was circling the clearing, eyes fixed on the ground, occasionally crouching to peer closely at a mark in the snow. Phelan had seen Master Huttrell do the same thing, but with considerably more grace. Huttrell gave off an aura of calm reflection when he looked for tracks. Mackerel was a sharp contrast, constantly on the move, agitated, restless. The crunch of hooves on snow heralded the arrival of three more brothers from the Fourth Order, all mounted on Australian hunters like Tendris, and possessing the hardy, weathered look of men who spend most of their lives on the hunt. They each greeted Phelan with a brief wave when Tendris introduced him, before going off to scour the surrounding area.
"They may have tracked through here," Tendris told them. "The dogs must have scented something beyond a likely meal in our young brother here."
"May I ask what you're searching for, brother?" Phelan inquired.
"The bane of our realm and our faith, Phelan,"
Tendris replied sadly.
"The unfaithful. It is a task charged to me and the brothers with whom I ride. We hunt those who would deny the faith. It may be a surprise to you that such folk exist, but believe me, they do."
"There's nothing here," Mackerel said. "No tracks, nothing for the dogs to scent."
He made his way through a heavy snowdrift to stand in front of Phelan.
"Except you, brother."
Phelan frowned.
"Why would your dogs track me?"
"Have you met anyone during your test?"
Tendris asked.
"A man and a girl, perhaps?"
"Erlin and Sella?"
Mackerel and Tendris exchanged a glance.
"When?"
Mackerel demanded.
"2 nights ago."
Valin was proud of the smoothness of the lie. He was becoming more adept at dishonesty. The snow was heavy. They needed shelter. I offered them mine. He looked at Tendris. Was I wrong to do so, brother?
Kindness and generosity are never wrong, Valin.
Tendris smiled. Valin was disturbed by the fact that the smile seemed genuine.
Are they still at your camp?
No, they left the next morning.
They said little. In fact, the girl said nothing.
Mackerel snorted a mirthless laugh.
She can't speak, boy.
She did give me this. Valin pulled Sella's silk scarf from under his shirt. By way of thanks, the man said. I saw no harm in taking it. It offers no warmth. If you're hunting them, perhaps your dog scented this.
Mackerel leaned closer, sniffing the scarf. Nostrils flared, his eyes locked on Valin's.
He doesn't believe a word of it, Valin realized.
Did the man tell you where they were going? Tendris asked.
North, to Renfell. He said the girl had family there.
He lied, Mackerel said. She has no family anywhere.
Next to Valin, the dog's growls deepened. Mackerel moved back slowly, making Valin wonder what kind of dog could provoke fear in its own master.
Valin, this is very important, Tendris said, leaning forward in his saddle, studying Valin intently.
Did the girl touch you at all?
Touch me, brother?
Yes, even the slightest touch.
Valin remembered the hesitancy as Sella reached to him, and realized she hadn't touched him at all, although the depth of her gaze when she found something in him had felt almost like being touched.
Touched on the inside.
No. No, she didn't.
Tendris settled back into the saddle, nodding in satisfaction.
Then you were indeed fortunate.
Fortunate?
The girl's a denier witch, boy, Mackerel said.
He had perched on the birch trunk, and was chewing a sugar cane that had appeared in his weathered fist.
She can twist your heart with a touch of that dainty hand of hers.
What our brother means, Tendris explained, is that this girl has a power, an ability that comes from the dark. The heresy of the unfaithful sometimes manifests itself in strange ways.
She has a power?
It's better we don't burden you with the details. He tugged his horse's reins, guiding it to the edge of the clearing, looking around for tracks.
They left yesterday morning, you say?
Yes, brother. Valin tried not to look at Mackerel, knowing the stocky tracker was subjecting him to an intense, dubious scrutiny.
Heading north.
Hmm.
Tendris glanced at Mackerel. Can we still track them without the dogs?
Mackerel shrugged.
Maybe. Won't be easy after last night's storm.
He took another bite from his sugar cane and tossed it away.
I'll do some scouting north of the hills. Best if you take the others and check towards the west and east. They may have tried to double back and throw us off their trail.
He gave Valin a final hostile glare before disappearing into the trees at a dead run.
It's time for me to take my leave, brother. Tendris said. I'm sure I'll see you again when you've passed all your tests. Who knows? Perhaps there'll be a place in my company for a young brother with a brave heart and a quick eye.
Valin looked at the bodies of the two dogs, streaks of blood staining the white blanket of snow.
They would have killed me. That's what they're bred for, not just tracking.
If they'd found Sella and Erlin.
Who knows down what paths the faith leads us, brother, he told Tendris,
not having the stomach to force more than a neutral tone into his voice.
Indeed,
Tendris nodded, accepting the wisdom.
Well, luck go with you.
Valin was so surprised that his plan had worked, that he let Tendris guide his horse to the edge of the clearing before he remembered to ask a vital question.
Brother, what do I do with this dog?
Tendris looked over his shoulder as he rode away, spurring his mount to a canter.
Kill it if you're smart. Keep it if you're brave.
He laughed, raising a hand as his horse accelerated into a gallop, snow rising into a thick cloud that shimmered in the winter sun. Valin looked down at the dog. It gazed up at him with adoring eyes, long pink tongue lolling from a mouth wet with drool. Again he noted the numerous scars on its snout. Although still young, this animal clearly had endured a hard life.
Scratch, he told it.
I'll call you Scratch.
Dog flesh proved a tough, sinewy meat,
but Valin was long past being choosy over his food. Scratch had whined continually as Valin butchered one of the carcasses back at the clearing, slicing a rear haunch off the largest dog. He had kept his distance as Valin carried the prize back to the camp and cut strips of meat to roast over his fire. Only when the meat had been eaten and Valin had hidden the remainder in his tree hole did the dog venture closer, snuffling at Valin's feet in search of reassurance. Whatever the savage traits of Valerian slavehounds, it appeared cannibalism was not among them. "Don't know what I'm going to feed you if you won't eat your own kind," Valin mused, patting Scratch awkwardly on the head. The dog was clearly unused to being petted and shrank warily when Valin first tried it. He'd been back at the camp for over an hour, cooking, building the fire, clearing snow from his shelter, and resisting the temptation to go and see if Erlin and Sella were still hiding in the hollow. He had felt a sense of wrongness ever since Tendris had ridden away, a suspicion that the man had accepted his word a little too easily. He could be wrong, of course. Tendris had struck him as the kind of brother whose faith was absolute and unshakable. If so, then the concept of a fellow brother lying to protect a denier at that, simply wouldn't occur to him. On the other hand, could a man who spent his life hunting the realm for heretics remain so free of cynicism? Without answers to these questions, Valin couldn't risk checking on the fugitives. There was nothing on the wind to warn him otherwise, no change in the song of the wild, threatening ambush, but still he stayed in his camp, ate dog flesh, and puzzled over what to do with his gift. Scratch seemed an oddly cheerful animal, considering he'd been bred to hunt and kill people. He scampered about the camp, playing with sticks or bones he dug out of the snow, bringing them to Valin, who quickly learned trying to wrestle them away was a pointless, tiring task. He wasn't remotely sure he would be allowed to keep the dog when he returned to the Order. Master Chekril, the keeper of the kennels, was unlikely to want such a beast near his beloved hounds. More likely they would pull a dagger across its throat as soon as he appeared at the gates. They went hunting in the afternoon, Valin expecting another fruitless search, but it wasn't long before Scratch picked up a trail. With a brief yelp he was off, bounding through the snow, Valin struggling in his wake. It wasn't long before he found the source of the trail, the frozen carcass of a small deer, no doubt caught in the storm the night before. Oddly it was untouched. Scratch sat patiently beside the corpse, eyeing Valin warily as he approached. Valin gutted the carcass, tossing the entrails to Scratch, whose ecstatic reaction took him by surprise. He yelped happily, gulping the meat down in a frenzy of teeth and snapping jaws. Valin dragged the deer back to camp, pondering the odd change in his circumstances. He had gone from near starvation to an abundance of food in less than a day, more food, in fact, than he could eat before Master Huttrell returned to take him back to the order house. Darkness came swiftly, a cloudless, moonlit night turning the snow into folds of blue silver and laying out a vast panorama of stars above him. If Canis had been there, he could have named all the constellations, but Valin could pick out only a few of the more obvious ones. The sword, the stag, the maiden. Canis had told him of a legend that claimed the first souls of the departed had cast the stars into the sky from the beyond as a gift for the generations to come, making patterns to guide the living through the path of life. Many claimed to be able to read the message written in the sky. Most of them seemed to congregate in marketplaces and fairs, offering guidance for a palmful of copper. He was wondering at the meaning of the sword pointing toward the south, when his sense of wrongness hardened into cold certainty. Scratch tensed, lifting his head slightly. There was no scent, no sound, no warning at all, but something wasn't right. Valin turned, glancing over his shoulder at the unmoving foliage behind him. "So silent," he wondered, a little awed. "No assassin could be that skillful." "If you're hungry, brother," he called, "I have plenty of meat to spare." He turned back to the fire, adding some logs to keep the flames high. After a short interval there was a crunch of boots on snow, as Mackerel stepped past him to crouch opposite, spreading his hands to the fire. He didn't look at Valin, but glowered at Scratch. "Should have killed that bloody thing," he grumbled. Valin ducked into his shelter to fetch a portion of meat. "Deer," he tossed it to Mackerel. The stocky man speared the meat with his knife and arranged a small mound of rocks to secure it over the fire before spreading his bedroll on the ground to sit down.
"Fine night, brother," Balin said.
Mackerel grunted, undoing his boots to massage his feet. The smell was enough to make Scratch get up and slink away.
"I'm sorry Brother Tendris did not find my word trustworthy," Balin continued.
"He believed you."
Mackerel picked something from between his toes and tossed it into the fire, where it popped and hissed.
"He's a true man of the faith, whereas I am a suspicious gutter-born bastard. That's why he keeps me with him. Don't get me wrong. He's a man of many abilities, finest horseman I ever saw, and he can extract information from a denier quicker than you can blow your nose. But in some ways he's an innocent. He trusts the faithful. For him, all the faithful have the same belief. His belief. But not yours?"
Mackerel placed his boots near the fire to dry.
"I hunt. Tracks, signs, spore, a scent on the wind. The rush of blood that comes from a kill. That's my faith. What's yours, boy?"
Balin shrugged. He suspected a trap in Mackerel's openness, luring him into an admission best kept silent.
"I follow the faith," he replied, forcing certainty into his words. "I am a brother of the Sixth Order."
"The Order has many brothers, all different, all finding their own paths in the faith. Don't kid yourself that the Order is filled with virtuous men who spend every spare moment groveling to the departed. We're soldiers, boy. Soldiers' life is hard, short on pleasure and long on pain.
The Aspect says there's a difference between a soldier and a warrior. A soldier fights for pay or loyalty. We fight for the faith. War is our way of honoring the departed."
Mackerel's face took on a somber cast, a craggy, hairy mask in the yellow firelight, his eyes distant, focused on unhappy memories.
"War? War is blood and shit and men maddened with pain calling for their mothers as they bleed to death. There is no honor in it, boy."
His eyes shifted, meeting Valen's.
"You'll see it, you poor little bastard. You'll see it all."
Suddenly uncomfortable, Balin added another log to the fire.
"Why were you hunting that girl?"
"She's a denier. A denier most foul, for she has power to twist the hearts of virtuous men."
He gave a short, ironic laugh.
"So I think I'd be safe if she ever met me."
"What is it?
This power?" Mackerel tested the meat with his fingers and began to eat, biting off small mouthfuls, chewing thoroughly, then swallowing. It was the practiced, unconscious action of a man who did not savor food, but merely took it into himself as fuel.
"It's a dark tale, boy," he said between mouthfuls. "Might give you nightmares."
"I've got those already."
Mackerel raised a bushy eyebrow but didn't comment. Instead, he finished his meat and fished in his pack for a small leather flask.
"Brother's friend," he explained, taking a swig. "Cumbrian brandy mixed with red flour. Keeps the fire in a man's belly when he's walking a wall on the northern frontier, waiting for Lonax savages to cut his throat."
He offered the flask to Valen, who shook his head. Liquor wasn't forbidden in the Order, but it was frowned upon by the most faithful masters. Some said anything that dulled the senses was a barrier to the faith. The less a man remembered of his life, the less he had to take with him to the beyond. Clearly Brother Mackerel didn't share this view.
"So you want to know about the witch?"
He relaxed, resting his back against a rock, intermittently sipping from his flask.
"Well, the story goes she was arrested on council orders following reports of unfaithful practices. Allegations are usually a load of nonsense. People claiming to have heard voices from the beyond that don't come from the departed. Healing the sick, communing with beasts and so on. Mostly it's just frightened peasants blaming each other for their misfortunes. But every once in a while you get one like her. There'd been trouble in her village. She and her father were outsiders from Renfell. Kept to themselves, he made a living as a scribe. A local landowner wanted him to forge some deeds, something to do with a dispute over the inheritance of some pasture. The scribe refused and ended up with an axe in his back a few days later. The landowner was a cousin of the local magistrate, so nothing was done. 2 days later, he walked into the local tavern, confessed his crime and cut his own throat from ear to ear.
And they blamed her for that?
It seems they'd been seen together earlier in the day, which was odd because there was said to be hatred between them even before the bastard killed her father. They said she touched him. A short pat on the arm. Didn't help that she was mute and an outsider. Being a little too pretty and a little too smart didn't do her any favors either. They always said there was something about her. She wasn't right. But they always say that.
So you arrested her?
Oh, no. Tendris and me, we only hunt the ones that run. Brothers from the Second Order searched her house and found evidence of Denier activity. Forbidden books, images of gods, herbs and candles, the usual stuff. Turned out she and her father were followers of the Sun and the Moon, a minor sect. They're pretty harmless mostly, since they don't try to convert others to their heresy. But a denier's a denier. She was taken to the Black Hold. The next night she escaped.
She escaped the Black Hold?
Valen wasn't sure if Mackerel was mocking him.
The Black Hold was a squat, ugly fortress in the center of the capital, its stones stained with soot from the nearby foundries, famed as a place where people were taken and didn't come out again unless it was to walk the path to the gallows or the gibbet. If a man went missing, and his neighbors heard he was taken to the Black Hold, they stopped asking when he would return. In fact, they didn't mention him at all. And no one ever escaped.
How is such a thing possible? Valen wondered.
Mackerel took a long pull from his flask before continuing.
Did you ever hear of Brother Shasta?
Valen recalled some of the more lurid battle stories told by the older boys.
Shasta the Axe?
That's him. A legend in the Order. A great brute of a man. Arms like tree trunks. Fists like hams. They said he killed over 100 men before they sent him to the Black Hold. Truly, he was a hero. And quite the stupidest shithead I ever met. Mean with it, too. Especially when he had a drink. He was a jailer.
I had heard he was a great warrior, who did the Order much service, Valen said.
Mackerel snorted.
The Black Hold is where the Order puts its relics, boy. The ones that survived their 15 years are too stupid or too mad to be masters or commanders. They get sent to the Black Hold to live out their time locking up heretics, even if they're no bloody good at it. I've seen plenty of Shastas, big, ugly, brutish idiots with no thought in their heads but the next battle or the next tankard of ale. Usually they don't last long enough to be a problem, but if they're big and strong enough, they linger like a bad smell.
Shasta lingered long enough to be sent to the Black Hold. Faith help us.
So, Valen ventured carefully, this oaf left her cell open and she walked out?
Mackerel laughed a hard, unpleasant sound.
Not quite. He gave her the keys to the front gate, took his axe down from the wall of his quarters, and started killing the other brothers on watch. Cut down 10 men before one of the archers put enough shafts in him to slow him down. Even then he killed 2 more before they gutted him. Weird thing, he died with a smile on his face, and before he died he said something.
She touched me.
Valen realized his fingers were playing on the subtle weave of Sella's scarf.
She touched him, he asked,
auburn curls and elfin features looming large in his head.
Mackerel took another long gulp from his flask.
So they say. Didn't know the nature of a dark affliction, see? If she touches you, you're hers forever.
Valen was feverishly engaged in recalling his every encounter with Sella. I pushed her into the shelter. Did I touch her then?
No, she was well clothed.
She reached to me, though. I felt her in my head.
Was that how she touched me?
Is that why I helped her? He felt an urge to ask Mackerel for more information, but knew it would be folly. The tracker was suspicious enough already. Drunk as he was, it would be unwise to question him further.
Tendris and me have been hunting her ever since, Mackerel continued. 4 weeks now. This is the closest we've got. It's that bastard she's with. Swear I'm going to make him swill good and long before I kill him.
He cackled and drank some more. Valen found his hand inching closer to his knife. He was forming a deep dislike of Brother Mackerel. He reminded him too much of the assassins in the forest. And who knew what conclusions he had drawn?
He told me his name was Erlin, he said. Erlin Relis,
Hetril, he's got 100 names.
So who is he really?
Mackerel gave an extravagant shrug.
Who knows? He helps deniers. Helps them hide. Helps them run.
Did he tell you about his travels? From the Alpiran Empire to the Leandran temples?
The knife hilt was tight in Valin's grasp.
He told me.
Impressed, were you?
Mackerel belched a long rumble of escaping gas.
I've travelled, you know. I've bloody travelled. Meldinian Islands, Cumbriel, Renfell, killed rebels, heretics and outlaws all over this great land I have. Men, women, children.
Valin's knife was halfway out of its sheath. He's drunk. Won't be too difficult.
One time me and Tendris found a whole sect. Families. Bowing to one of their gods in a barn in the Martish. Tendris got angry. It's best not to argue with him when he gets like that. He ordered us to lock the doors and douse the place in lamp oil. Then he struck a flint. Wouldn't have thought children could scream so loud.
The knife was almost clear of its sheath when Valin saw something that made him stop. Beads of silver were shining in Mackerel's beard. He was crying.
They screamed for such a long time.
He lifted his flask to his mouth but found it was empty.
Shit.
Grumbling, he got unsteadily to his feet and stumbled off into the darkness. A short while later came the distinctive sound of piss hissing into snow. Valin knew if he was going to do it, now was the time. Slit the bastard's throat when he's having a piss. A fitting end for such a vile man. How many more children will he kill if I let him live? But the tears were troubling. Tears that told him Mackerel was a man who hated what he did. And he was a brother of the Order. It seemed wrong to kill a man whose fate he might be sharing in years to come. A sudden conviction rose in him then, fierce and implacable. I'll fight, but I won't murder. I'll kill men who face me in battle, but I won't take the sword to innocence. I won't kill children.
Is Hutril still there?
Mackerel slurred, stumbling back to collapse onto his bedroll.
Still teaching you little shits how to track.
He's still there. We're grateful for his wisdom.
Fuck his wisdom. It was supposed to be my job, you know. Commander Lilden said I was the finest tracker in the Order. Said when he got made Aspect, he'd bring me back to the house to be Master of the Wild. Then the silly bastard got a Mildenian saber through his guts and Arlin was chosen. Never like me, the sanctimonious shit. Chose Hutril, legendary silent hunter of the Martish Forest. Sent me off to hunt heretics with Tendris.
He slumped onto his back, his eyes half-lidded, his voice softening to a whisper.
Never asked for this. I just wanted to learn how to track. Like my old man could. Just wanted to track.
Valin watched him pass out, and added more wood to the fire. Scratch crept back to camp, and settled next to him, after a few wary glances at Mackerel. Valin scratched his ears, reluctant to go to bed, knowing his dreams would be full of burning barns and screaming children. Although his urge to kill Mackerel had evaporated, he still didn't feel comfortable sharing a camp with the man. He spent another hour studying the stars with Scratch beside him. On the other side of the fire, Mackerel slept his drunken sleep in silence. It was odd that the tracker made so little noise, not a snore nor a grunt. Even his breathing was soft. Valin wondered if this was a skill that could be learnt, or was it an instinct all brothers gained after years of service? No doubt the ability to sleep in silence could prolong a man's life. He took to the shelter when tiredness made his eyelids droop, settling into his blanket with Scratch between him and the entrance. He had decided Mackerel hadn't come to kill him, but it was best to be safe, and it seemed highly unlikely the man would attempt an attack if he had to get past the dog. Valin huddled close to the animal, drawing warmth and feeling glad he had kept him. A boy could do worse than have a slave hound for a friend. In the morning, Mackerel was gone. Valin searched thoroughly but found no sign the tracker had ever been close by. As expected, the hollow where he had hidden Sela and Erlin was empty. He took Sela's scarf from his neck, studying the intricate pattern woven into the silk, gold threads describing various sigils. Some were clearly recognizable. A crescent moon, the sun, a bird, others unfamiliar. Probably icons of her denier beliefs. If so, he should discard it. Any master finding it would mete out severe punishment, maybe more than a beating. But it was such a well-made thing, so finely woven, the gold thread glittering like new. He knew Sella would grieve its loss terribly. It had been her mother's, after all. Sighing, he tucked the scarf into his sleeve, and sent a silent plea to the departed to see the pair safely to wherever they were going. He made his way back to the camp, lost in thought. He had to decide what to tell Master Huttrell, and needed time to consider his lies carefully. Scratch scampered ahead of him, snapping at the snow joyfully. It was a silent ride back with Master Huttrell. Valin was the only boy in the cart. He asked about the others, and received only a grunted response.
"Bad year, the storm."
Valin shivered, suppressing panicked thoughts about his comrades, and climbed onto the cart. Huttrell started off with Scratch scampering after, in the deep ruts left in the snow. Huttrell had listened to Valin's story in silence, staring expressionlessly at Scratch as Valin stumbled through his partially invented account. He stuck mostly to the same story he had told Tendris, but left out Mackerel's visit the night before. Huttrell's only reaction had come when Valin mentioned the tracker's name, a raised eyebrow. Otherwise he said nothing, letting the silence drag out when Valin had finished talking.
I suggest we take the dog back to the house, Master, Valin said. Master Jeklin may find a use for him.
The Aspect will decide that, Huttrell said. Get in.
At first it seemed the Aspect would have even less to say than Master Huttrell, sitting behind his large oak-wood desk, staring wordlessly at Valin over steepled fingers as he repeated his tale, desperately hoping he remembered it correctly. The presence of Master Solis, seated in the corner, did little to alleviate his discomfort. Valin had been to the Aspect's room only once before, on an errand to deliver parchment, and found the piles of books and papers that littered the place had grown since. There must have been hundreds of books crammed in here, stacks stretching from floor to ceiling, with countless scrolls and ribbon-bound sheaves of documents occupying the remaining space. It was a collection that made his mother's library seem paltry in comparison. Valin had been surprised at the lack of interest in Scratch. The master seemed preoccupied, besides which they were difficult men to impress at the best of times. Solis had met him in the courtyard as he got down from the cart. Favoring Scratch with a brief look of incurious disgust, he said,
"Nissa and Dentos made it back so far. The others are due in tomorrow. Leave your gear here and follow me to the Aspect's chambers. He wants to see you."
Valin assumed the Aspect wanted an explanation as to why he had returned with a large and savage animal in tow, and repeated his story when the Aspect asked for a report on his test.
"You seem well fed," the Aspect observed. "Usually boys return thinner and weaker."
"I was fortunate, Aspect.
The dog helped by scenting a stag killed in a storm. I didn't think it would breach the conditions of the test if we had permitted to use whatever tools we find in the wild."
"Yes."
The Aspect clasped his long fingers together, resting them on the desk.
"Very resourceful. Pity you couldn't help Brother Tendris in his search. He is one of the Faith's most valued servants."
Valin thought of burning children and forced an earnest nod.
"Indeed, Aspect. I was impressed with his devotion."
Valin heard Solis make a small noise behind him, and couldn't decide if it was a laugh or a snort of derision. The Aspect smiled, an odd sight on such a thin face, but it was a smile of regret.
"There have been events beyond our walls since your test began," he said. "That is why I called you here. The Battle Lord has resigned from the King's service. This has caused disharmony in the realm. The Battle Lord was popular with the common folk. That being the case, and in recognition of his